It is Chase and Big Joe, 1025, 1063, the game. Chase McCabe, Big Joe Dubin with you on this Thursday. Hope you're having a great start to your day, as we do every Thursday at 9:30. I think we're efforting him right now. We'll talk to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here in just a few minutes. Want to get his thoughts on not only the Predators, but also what's happening with the Ottawa Senators right now, as their GM, Pierre Dorion, has been fired, or they've mutually agreed to part ways, however you want to put it. But he is no longer the general manager. We say hello to Greg, who's on the line with us now. Greg, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. It was kind of a long, wild day yesterday, man. I was at MetLife Stadium for the Stadium Series press conference for the Devils and Flyers and Rangers and Islanders, and then ended my day watching Ottawa implode. It was a pretty long and varied day in the National Hockey League.
So this is an investigation that's been going on for a while, but is this the result that you expected with Dorion being out?
You know, I expected Dorion to be out at some point. The man hasn't made the playoffs in 6 years. and usually right. When there's a new owner and he brings in his dude, Steve Staios, to oversee hockey operations, the writing is on the wall that the current regime is probably not going to be long for this world. So, you know, one of the theories yesterday was, oh, did this just kind of give him cover to make this change early in the season? And there's probably some plausibility to that. But I think it's also quite clear that Michael Andlauer, the guy who bought the Ottawa Senators for what is at the time a record amount of money, just short of $1 billion, read this lengthy report the NHL gave him last week and came away believing that the team was, in his own words, like negligent in their behavior with regard to not alerting the Vegas Golden Knights about this no trade clause. So he felt it was an egregious problem. And in his own words, you know, they pissed off two teams, the Ducks and the Golden Knights, and they embarrassed the NHL. And when that happens, it's usually somebody's going to have to pay the price. And it was Pierre Dorion.
Yeah, you cannot not do that and survive. That's generally how it works. So he is out for sure. Obviously, one of the big conversations around hockey has been the just terrible, terrible situation and sad death of Adam Johnson, the former Penn playing hockey in England. And just player safety. The NHL and the NHLPA have discussed that. Are net guards going to be mandatory? I mean, I feel like, you know, we all remember the moments when, you know, helmets became mandatory, face shields became mandatory. I mean, it gets to that point. I hate that it takes something like this to get to that point. But when do you think that that is going to happen, where we're likely to see net guards in the National Hockey League?
Yeah, your last comment's an important one. I talked to Danny Briere, the GM of the Flyers yesterday, of course, played in the league for 17 seasons. And he said something along the lines of, you know, it's always tough when it takes a tragedy for us to address something like this. And now the task is for us to address it before the next tragedy. And that's kind of how it feels right now with this neck guard issue. I spoke to Gary Bettman. I spoke to Marty Walsh, the executive director of the NHLPA, yesterday. And it's pretty clear that, first of all, Bettman reached out to the PA the day after the Adam Johnson situation happened. They've been looking, the NHL, at technology, at the right kind of equipment that they could maybe have the players use in these games. But the real question right now is it going to remain a voluntary thing? Or is it going to be a situation like we had with visors, where the NHL gets enough support from the players to mandate it, and then you just have players get grandfathered in that don't want to wear them? That seems like, in talking to some people, the most likely scenario that plays out. But we're early on in the process. They're still trying to identify the right technology to kind of go with. And it is going to take getting the players all on the same page with regard to neck and wrist protection. And that's not always an easy task, getting the entire NHLPA on the same page, especially when it comes to mandating that they wear a certain piece of equipment or alter the equipment that they wear.
I'm curious too, Greg, that, you know, Greg Wyshynski's with us, and I want to be sensitive how I put this, but, you know, it has been described as a freak accident, of something that doesn't happen all the time, and I mean it doesn't. I mean, we've seen guys get cut by skates before, but nothing to this level. And so I am curious of when the players look at this. They understand that player safety is important, but how much are they thinking, well, you know, this is something that doesn't happen all the time. It won't happen to me, you know, and what those discussions are like.
Yeah, there's lots to unpack there because you're right. It's not something that you know, happens all the time, and thank God for that. Sure. You also have the thing that you mentioned, which is that these guys inevitably feel invincible, so they don't feel like they need to have that kind of protection. And then the other thing, too, we were talking to Teddy Bluger, who was a teammate of Adam Johnson's with the Pittsburgh Penguins, and he said, you know, it's also a situation where you don't want hesitation to creep into your game. So they don't even think about this as a possibility because they don't want to have that in the back of their minds while they're playing. The other part of it, too, on top of it being kind of a freak accident, is this is something that Dan Carcillo, who played in the NHL for a long time, said the other day. You know, the NHL and the AHL and these North American have a high quality of talent where they know how to take care of each other. You know, they know how to play safe. And you know, what I've heard from him and maybe a couple of other people is that, like, when you're dealing with leagues overseas, sometimes you're dealing with lower levels of talent and accidents can happen. So I guess the sum total of what I'm trying to say is that, yeah, there is that sentiment of, are we overreacting to something that is not commonplace in hockey and especially not commonplace in the NHL? And that's part of the conversation they're going to be having.
Greg, let me ask you that. I spent most of my career in the NFL locker room talking to guys, and when something tragic would happen or a bad injury, and you'd ask, hey, you know, your thoughts about this and everything, they very rarely wanted to talk about it because it always, like, that could be me. When you talk to hockey players about an incident like that unfortunate one with Adam Johnson, things like that, how open are they to talk about their feelings about this?
They're open to talking about it, but like you said, I mean, you know, discussing something that's kind of a topic of conversation, like should we add a piece of equipment to the uniforms, is sort of different than do they talk about this on their own. And, you know, I think when we as the media go and ask them, they're very, you know, insightful. They're very, you know, opinionated. They give you their take on things. And you know, there is a certain echo chamber aspect of it where you kind of hear the same thing over and over again, which is that, hey, we want everybody to be safe. We just have to find the right way to do this and yada, yada, yada. But the conversations that are having behind the scenes, I think, are a lot different. I mean, you do have players that obviously know guys that had skate cuts. You have players that know Adam Johnson. You have players that, you know, have been in situations where an inch or two over and that skate could have hit them. So you do have that recognition. But then you also have players that simply don't want to think about it and don't want to address it. I got to be honest with you. Like, in the last week in talking to guys off the record, I'm wondering what the volume of noise was between them talking about the Adam Johnson tragedy and them talking about a guy getting a 41-game suspension for gambling. Because, like, honestly, right. You know, one is a freak accident and you're scared to death that's going to happen to you one day. The other one is, you know, a palpable loss of income for half the season for something that a lot of these guys don't even know what he did. In my conversations, this is going to sound really weird, but I heard more panic in voices about the gambling thing than I heard about the Adam Johnson thing, wow. If I'm being honest.
Wow. Nashville Predators started the road trip, a loss to Vancouver. How important is an early season big road trip like this for a team like the Predators? New coach, new GM, bunch of new faces. Even if they win a couple, I know they won all the games, but what would be a successful road trip, Greg, in your eyes, for this Nashville Predator team on this road trip?
Well, like you said, I mean, it's early, but early is important. If your team is in a playoff spot as of November 1st, 67% of those teams make the playoffs in the NHL, and that number goes up to nearly 80% by Thanksgiving. And, you know, while we don't want to – we're always kind of, like, hesitant to put too much importance on the beginning of the season, but it's pretty important. and history shows you that if you get off the blocks pretty good, you're going to do pretty well for yourself, insofar as playoff qualification. So, you know, important road trips, important to play well, important to kind of establish their game, and important to start picking up W's, because the sooner you get into a playoff spot, the better it's going to be to maybe stay there.
Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, is with us. And speaking of Vancouver, they're second in the Pacific Division right now, behind Vegas. And I've been, you know, in the two games that the Predators have played against them, I've been pretty impressed. Do you think that this is sustainable, or are they going to fall off?
No, man. Like they're a really interesting team because I think that they're loaded with talent. I picked them to make the playoffs this year because I thought that a full training camp of Rick Tocchet to kind of mold and shape this team into what he wanted it to be. Hopefully good health to players like Thatcher Demko and Brock Besser. And they also made some changes to their blue line that improved the defense in front of Demko, which I thought was a real key. But the thing I'm most impressed about with them is Tocchet. And like, if you are looking for like early odds on who might win the Jack Adams, I think he's not a bad choice to make because you're starting to hear more and more stories about him calling out players. And you know, he called his team soft 3 games into the season. He parked JT Miller on the bench the other night. Like, you're starting to see him really kind of assert himself with this team and get them to play the way he wants them to play. And so far, so good, man. Not only are they second in the division, they're also a plus 15 goal differential, which is not usually where you expect the Vancouver Canucks to be.
No, no doubt about it. Rick Tocchet is certainly one of my favorites. Go ahead, Joe.
Greg, now 10 games in, I know we love to overreact, especially Chase and myself. What team are you looking at in the league after 10 games, 9 games, 11 games? Like, all right, what's going on here? You guys aren't doing that good. Any team stands out? I know you talked to Ottawa. To me, looking at Pittsburgh right there is kind of something I haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah, the Pittsburgh situation is a rough one, man. Like, you know, they're off the blocks 3-6. They aren't really good at anything right now. They're not getting goaltending. The Erik Karlsson thing, you know, results aren't in. They're just not gelling as a team, and that's got to be really frustrating for a guy like Sidney Crosby, who, you know, obviously thought that they made some moves in the offseason to kind of turn this around and make them at least a playoff contender again. Besides the San Jose Sharks, who I had a player tell me this week may not win a game this season. and usually when you hear that, you think to yourself, okay, that's hyperbole, but I've seen him play, man. It might be a solid prediction. The Calgary Flames are really the biggest disappointment, I think, in the league this year. I didn't expect much from them, to be honest with you. I think they've lost so much offensive talent in the last 2 years that it was going to be hard for them to really, you know, contend for anything. But to come off the blocks as bad as they have, and not only that, there was a report from Sportsnet that said that all contract negotiations with their pending free agents are on hold as they kind of try to, like, figure this thing out. New GM, new coach, disastrous start. They lose the outdoor game to their arch rival, the Oilers. I mean, it's really been, outside of a couple of situations, Pittsburgh being one of them, I think the Flames have been the biggest disappointment so far.
I would say both Alberta teams are feeling disappointed right now, if I'm being honest.
They are, but I mean, you got to remember, like, now the Oilers got to win. And in this dumb league, like, the minute you get a win, everybody starts smiling and the momentum is building. It's kind of amazing. And honestly, like, you know, I was talking to somebody about this before the Heritage Classic happened. Those outdoor games are sneaky resets. It's something I've found in covering as many of them that I have, where not only is it a great break in the schedule for these guys to, like, skate with their families and do something different and break out of the routine, but it's also like a chance to say, okay, from this moment on, if you win this game, this is where our season's going. And I wonder if that takes effect for the Oilers after winning that outdoor game as convincingly as they did.
Yeah, may very well be. Greg, I appreciate it as always. We'll talk to you next week.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Greg Wyshynski from ESPN joins us every Thursday at 9:30. Appreciate that. We'll get back into your predictions for the score tonight with the Titans and the Steelers. 615-737-1025. How many more spots you got, Joe?
We have 14 more spots. So you predict the game tonight, and Chase, the boss, is going to give whoever gets it correctly tickets to see Creed, which, by the way, are the hottest tickets in the history of planet Earth.
Yes, they are. Coming to Ascend Amphitheater this summer. So be on the lookout for that. August 13th is when they'll be at Ascend Amphitheater. Tickets go on sale tomorrow at 10 o'clock. We'll take more of your calls and texts, 615-737-1025 on the Titans. That's next, 1025-1063 The Game.